Steve Lampen. He's going to talk on bend radius. That's half a bend diameter, right?
Yeah.
The great Carnac.
That was last night's joke.
That's last night's joke. He didn't even think it was funny. I did. Steve has been with Lampen for 17 years.
With Lampen?
With Belt.
Okay, now.
All right.
We're getting way too serious here, okay?
Well, see, I thought they were going to name the company after you.
Yeah.
After all these
Lampen
years.
Lampen Wire and Cable.
Lampen right? Wire and Cable.
Yeah. That'll be the day.
Since they said he gets wired once in a while.
Yeah, but we don't talk about that.
Steve Lampen of Belt and Cable's been there for 17 years. I'll bet you once in a while your boss says, Okay. And Steve's got his latest book, The Audio Video Cable Installer's Guide, The Pocket Guide, McGraw-Hill. And also you can see his column, Wired for Sound, that appears in Radio World magazine. So, Stephen, it's all yours.
Well, thank you. Well, see, they're applauding that you finished talking. See, I wanted to point this out. So, now, I'll tell you. Why did they put me after lunch? To keep you awake, exactly. That's the whole point. That's why I'm here, you know? And in between the jokes, I occasionally talk about wire. But I'll tell you, this may sound like the most boring subject you have ever heard in your life. Yes, you know, they're not supposed to bend wire. You know, you've already known that. What am I supposed to tell you here? I'm going to tell you 45 minutes of how to bend wire. Well, it's not possible, is it? Except that, you see, I've spent the last 10, 12 years, how many times have I come here? I don't know, I've lost track. Telling you, oh, be careful with your cable, and, you know, and when you put it in, you don't use wire ties, or if you do, don't put them tightly, and don't put them at the same distance, and wavelengths, and, you know, return loss, and oh my God, things you're supposed to be scared of. Well, today, I'm going to go in the opposite direction. I'm going to show you stuff you can do to your cable and how little effect it will have. In fact, I've now given this twice before, and I have gotten more than a few people who have come up to me and said, this is a dangerous presentation, because I'm telling you things you can get away with. And of course, if somebody tells you that, then you're going to do this, right? You're going to get away with stuff. Well, the truth is, as we all know, you've been getting away with stuff forever. You just never knew it. And stuff that you thought, oh my God, that's not going to work, and then it works, and you kind of quietly look the other way and don't tell your boss and hide it in the bundle, you know? And geez, nobody ever called you on this because you didn't understand what you could and couldn't do, and you get away with a lot of crap that you shouldn't be able to. And that's really what this is about today. Now, in those presentations I gave you, there was always one slide, or maybe two slides, and one of them said, don't bend cable tighter than 10 times the diameter. I mean, that's the rule of thumb, right? Don't bend cable more than 10 times its diameter. And the point is, who said that? Where'd that come from? Was that some guy in 1812 who said this, you know? I don't know who said this. And if you go to some data people, some of them will say, don't bend their cable when it's installed more than 4 times the diameter. Where'd this come from? You know? I've never seen any test results to tell you this. And so guess what? I decided to test bending of cable. And what do you do? It's really very simple. You go into a lab that has a TDR, a time domain reflectometer, something that will look at the impedance of cable. And you bend the cable and you look at it. How hard is this? You just have to do it kind of predictably. That's all. Oops. I have 2 switches here. Now, here's what you think you know. Bending the cable affects the performance. And you've accepted this your whole lives. You know this is true. And by bending the cable, you affect the dimensions of the cable. When you affect the dimensions of the cable, it affects the impedance of the cable. When you affect the impedance of the cable, it affects things like return loss, and, you know, it's a bad deal. So try not to bend the cable, you know? And don't bend it tighter than 10 times the diameter, you know, wherever that came from. And here's the other thing. Once you've bent the cable, I've said this many times, once you've bent the cable, you can't unbend the cable, right? You can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. At least that's what I've been saying. Let's see if this is true. Nobody's ever tested this before. And we also believe things like stranded cables will be better at flexing than solid cables. Believe me, I had 4 or 5 conversations right here today with people saying, is this solid or stranded? I mean, they might be talking about data cables, but it's the same stuff. Wire is wire. And they assume, of course, the stranding is much better at flexing and moving than solid is. Well, it is in the case of breaking the cable. Solid will break before stranded will break. But is it better at being flexed? Well, nobody ever asked that before. And they also think, not just stranded cables, but cables made to be flexible. We make flexible video cables to go along with our unflexible video cables. Are those better at being flexed? Well, of course they are. They're made to be flexed, right? Except you know perfectly well. Well, some of you, you know, if you're car aficionados, and somebody says, ooh, I just got a Mazda Miata, which is a sports car, and you would say, that's not a sports car. It looks like a sports car, but it ain't no Ferrari, right? It looks like one. Well, wait a minute. So flexible cables appear flexible, but do they actually flex and perform better? Well, nobody ever asked that before. And, of course, you think smaller cables will flex better than bigger cables. I mean, these all sound so logical that you would accept these without question, without any testing at all. And this is where I get into dangerous ground, because many of those, not all of them, but many of those are wrong. And even I didn't know they were wrong. Even the engineers at Belden didn't know they were wrong until we actually started to test cables. Okay. Now, here's what we did. Now, I went into the lab and I said, I want something I can wind cable around. And the guy who was one of the lab technicians said, what about this? And they pulled out this aluminum mandrel thing and said, what about that? And I said, that's exactly what I'm looking for. It's part of some microwave test antenna doo-wacky. I don't even know what it's from, but it's exactly what I wanted. And the point is, you can see I put pieces of tape up and down this thing, and the bottom of that is 6 inches in diameter, and then 5, then 4, 3, 2, 1. The top one is 1 inch in diameter. And you can see the operator here, that's not my hands, that's somebody else's hands, just flexing the cable one time around, 360 degrees, around that particular diameter. Very simple, okay? Now, here's the first thing you have to realize. We only did one flex in one place on the cable, and we flexed it tighter and tighter and tighter. If I had done 2 flexes on a piece of cable, then suddenly I have some wavelength to consider. We didn't do this, right? Then I'm back to wavelength things, which certainly do show up. I only flexed the cable in one place, tighter, tighter, tighter. Now, the interesting thing is we went 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, but then we decided to go the ultimate and to crush the cable, as it's showing on the right, with a pair of pliers. This is called bending the cable, okay? I mean crushing it into 0 degrees of bend. Now, you'd think seriously that would show up, right? You would assume that would. And the point is, and we looked at that, and then we did the most interesting thing, I think, of all. We unbent that flattened cable. We unbent it by hand as well as we could. Now, believe me, when you unbend cable that's bent like this, it looks like crap. You could see it's bent. In fact, the color of the jacket has changed, so you can seriously see it's bent. And then we looked at that. This will blow you away in some of these instances. Okay. And in one instance, I wish we'd done this in more, but in one instance, they came back to the lab after 24 hours and looked at the cable that had been unbent after 24 hours to see what would happen. Does it change? Does it go anywhere? And I wish we had done all the cables. We only did one, and it's an inkling of some very interesting stuff. Okay. Here's the cone mandrel, you know, that aluminum doo-wacky, whatever it's from. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And you can see cone circumference. You can do the math yourself, you know, pi. you know, times equivalent diameter, and then, of course, the radius, which is half the diameter. You know, that was the joke last night. Thank you very much. Okay, there's the joke on the screen. And so I can see here's the radius in so many inches based on 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. No big deal. And here's the test gear that we used. Well, now, there are actually two pieces of test gear because, see, we tested coaxes and we tested twisted pairs. Now, I'll come back at the end and talk about analog twisted pairs. We tested digital audio, AES, twisted pairs. Now, these are not bonded pairs. They're not solid pairs. They're stranded. They're pretty much a common twisted pair. And really, that's what I wanted to see. You know, the standard common kind of stuff. What happens to that? And in fact, I'll show you a list of all the cables we tested in just a second. I mean, actually, the list could go on and on and on. And I wish now we could go on and on. I want to go back and do more because there are lots of things we didn't test. We didn't test data cables. We didn't test bonded pairs. We didn't test plenum cables. There are all sorts of things I'm saying, well, now that we know what happens here, what happens there? Invite me back next year. Maybe by then I'll have a whole slew of tests, bend radius part two, and I'll tell you what happens to all those other cables. Because this stuff is going to blow you away. Okay. Here's the cables we tested. 6094A, you probably know if you know video cable, world's most popular video cable. 1505A, its brother between those two. That's about, that accounts to almost 90% of all the video cable used in the U.S. these days, believe it or not. I mean, you know, we have the broadcasters locked up. Not the rest of the world, just the broadcasters. You know, you guys are our oyster. So the whole point is, okay, between those two, then we have the flexible versions of those two, 6094F. And 1505F, you might not be quite so familiar with. They're much more flexible. Do they withstand bending better than the solid? Let's see. Now he's saying no now. See, he's beginning to drink my Kool-Aid, right? Okay. So, okay. And then we have two twisted pairs, 1800B, which is the install version, foil shield, and 1800F, which is the flexible. It seems like mic cable, but it's really digital audio cable kind of stuff. And we're going to bend all of these and look at them. Okay. Bending changes dimensions, dimensions equal impedance, variations equal return loss, blah, blah, blah. In the coax world, I would say if you're looking at a really good coax and you're looking at the return loss of a coax, you're looking at something like 30 dB return loss. And what that means is with a signal going down that cable, three nines or 99.9% of the signal gets to the end of the cable. And 0.1%, a tiny percentage, reflects the wrong way. That's a really good coax. In fact, we can't consistently make coax to 30 dB. We are typically 30 dB, but see, you don't understand that I use weasel words here, and they go by you really fast. And one of them is the word typical. The word typical means 50% of the product is better than that, and 50% of the product is worse than that. That's what typical means. So when I say it's typically 30, that doesn't tell you anything, right? Because you don't know what you've got. You need to get, like, maximum numbers, which we do have. And I'll give you those in a second, too. So the whole point is when we start with coax, if I can get to 30 dB return loss, and I will actually calculate the changes of impedance into return loss and show you what these numbers are, if I can do 30, 30 is great. 30 is wonderful. If I can do better than 30, that's fabulous. If I do less than 30, 20, 10, that's not so good. Okay, so we have, you know, some realm of looking at these numbers. Now, here are the guarantees we have on our coaxes. Now, many of the coaxes, not all of them, for instance, not the flexible ones, but all of the solid ones are guaranteed now to 4.5 gigahertz. And you can see here's our return loss guarantee, which I could read to you, 23 dB, 21 dB at the higher frequencies. You know, that the cables would never be worse than that. You notice that's a fairly long way away from 30, you know, the number I'd like to be at. In fact, if you could consistently make cable at 30 dB, if you can guarantee 30 dB, we would buy all our cable from you. So this is your first billion-dollar idea of the day. And if you could do 40 dB... you would be the world's first trillionaire. You would own the coax market around the entire world because you could make coax that's better than anybody else. Well, nobody can do that. But we're getting better. That's the whole point. We're improving. The 3 gigahertz guarantee, which is like our flexible cables and some of our lesser cables. You can see that guarantee there. Kind of the same kind of numbers, but not as high frequency, right? So that's like saying this car will be guaranteed to go 100 miles an hour. Well, that's great on the freeway, on the racetrack. That's crap. I need to go 250 on the racetrack. Oh, well, that's a different kind of car, isn't it, right? Oh, okay. And they're flexible. Here's the flexible guarantees, right? Considerably less. Look at that, 20 and 15. Not very good. Well, because it's flexible. Because it's stranded, because the stuff moves around inside the cable. And when you play with it, it's not going to be as good as the solid. And it's twice as expensive because it's flexible. It's harder for us to make it. So believe me, if you want performance, put in the solid. Don't buy the flexible. You better only use the flexible for like a patch cord, you know, a few feet, because the solid is so much better and half the price. Okay. And then finally at the bottom, here's the SMPTE limit. SMPTE has a limit for return loss on everything, not just cables, but connectors, patch cords, patch panels, you know, adapters, you name it. Everything passive in the line. And their limit is 15 dB at to 1.5 gigahertz, and now a new limit, 10 dB at to 3 gigahertz. That's to cover 1080p applications. Okay, so there are industry limits. They're horrifically horrible. In fact, I am yelling right now at some SMPTE folks about the 10 dB number. That's a 10% reflection is allowed on the cable. Unbelievable! You know, but they're trying to let everybody get by, you know? That's the thing. It says 55 on the freeway, you know? That pretty much takes every car unless it's your tractor, you know? Then you have a problem. Okay. The other thing we're talking about is going to be eventually wavelengths. And the whole point is, what is critical, what depends on the frequency you're working at. Here are the limits of frequencies for various kinds of cables. That's, by the way, from the top down, 4.5 gigahertz would be 1080p. 3 gigahertz is 1080i. 1.5 gigahertz, well, it's sort of, and then you have SDI, 405 megahertz. And you notice as you go down and down, the critical distance becomes longer and longer and longer. And this is true all the way down to audio, you know, where the critical distance is 2 miles, which is why you never have to care about the impedance of the analog audio. You can't go far enough, unless you're the phone company, in which case you put a 111C coil. Where's Eric Small? I was talking about 111C coils with him yesterday. What wonderful things those are. Those to make up for the fact that the pairs are crap in the telephone company, but you knew that, right? It's a telephone company. And so they're making up for them with by putting stuff on the line. Okay, so the point is, as we get lower in frequency, things become less critical, that's all. But you're heading for 1080p, you know, where the critical distance is 2/3 of an inch, and that simply means everything is going to be critical. So you would think, therefore, when I'm going to bend the cable, that this would instantly show up as some horrible critical thing. Interesting that you're going to be wrong. Digital audio. Now, digital audio, I mean, the highest digital audio for a single channel that you're going to get is something like 24.576 megahertz. That's 192 kilohertz sampling. That's, you know, that's insanity for digital audio. That's the lunatic fringe for digital audio, you know, but some people record that. You want to use up your server space or your tape real fast? Record at 192 kilohertz. That means the critical distance is 10 feet, which is why you can use an XLR. What impedance is an XLR? Nobody knows, right? Doesn't exist. I guess you could measure it, but nobody cares. Because the critical distance is 10 feet, you could put a bunch of XLRs, would never show up. And by the time you're down at 48 kilohertz, 6.144 megahertz, now most of you guys, if you're doing digital audio, are playing at 48 kilohertz, you're at 40 feet. This is why you get by. In fact, I was talking twice in the last 12 hours with people saying, oh, we just use any kind of cable to do digital audio. And the point is, up to 40 feet, you can. And that's the point at which you need to know the impedance of the cable. And generally, I say 50 feet, but, you know, 40 feet is the actual number. So you can get by with a lot of crap running digital audio at 48 kilohertz. The funny thing is, Let's say you have a 30-foot patch cord that happens to be some old analog cable, and you're using it for digital. Works just fine. It's 30 feet long. And then somebody comes along and does 192 kilohertz sampling on it when the critical distance is 10 feet, and it doesn't work. Now you understand why, right? Based on distance. And then 44.1 at the home, you can go forever, which is why you can use those crappy RCA plugs that came with the thing on that orange jack, that, you know, spitif jack, and it works fine. What's the problem? Well, try going to the next room, you know, 43 feet, you'll find out. Okay. Here's the first cable, 1694A. Standard cable, solid, you know, high-density gas-injected foam interior, foil braid shield, 95% braille, the fanciest thing we can make. This is definitely our best cable. And there's the circumference of that mandrel, that aluminum thing, right? There's the diameter in inches, there's the radius in inches, and now I can say, okay, how many times the diameter is that? Because I want to stay less than 10 times. Well, it's interesting. I start at 0.954, which is 3.5 times the diameter, right? 3.47. I'm not going to start at 10. I'm going to start at 3. I'm going to be really tough. Okay. Now, oh, by the way, this is 76 slides long, and I'm going to get by this real fast because most of the slides are this. After the first cable, we're going to be zooming through because you're going to understand what you're looking at here. First of all, what you're looking at here, this is off this TDR that we're looking at. Oh, where's my pointer? Oh, it's dying. No, there we are. This here, you see this big blip here? That's the connection point to the coax. Now, we have this cool thing at Belden, which actually is patented by Belden, and by the guy who helped me in the lab, he patented it. I mean, this guy just has no ego at all, because you wouldn't even know it that he'd patent this thing. And the cool thing is you simply cut the end of the cable, and you shove it into this tube, and it makes all the connections for you. No connector. Ah, and you get the idea. This is cool, because if you're doing hundreds of cables, you know, you don't want to have to put a connector on each one. Oh, it's forever, you know. And so he invented this thing. And all you do is you pick the thing that fits the size of your cable. And he has a whole, you know, row of them. And we pick the one that fit, you know, RG6 here and put it on. Shove the cable, cut it off, shove it in. Now, we did a really lousy job because I wanted you to see the connector. There's the connector, right? This over here, this is the test tube that connects to the analyzer. So you can ignore that. That's a copper tube, mini, little mini hard line kind of thing, okay? What you're looking at on the right-hand side, this is the cable. This is the cable. And you notice the cable is pretty good at 75 ohms. This is 75 ohms here, but it doesn't matter. I'll show you what this is in a second. It's really good until we get to the end of the piece, the sample, whoop, it goes to infinity because, of course, its end is there. We cut the cable. And I didn't terminate the end. I just want you to see where the end of the cable is, right? So there's no mystery here at all. You're seeing like 2 or 3 feet of cable is what you're looking at. And somewhere in the middle of this cable, we're going to start bending and bending and bending this cable. And here we go. Okay, 3.47 times the diameter. Where in this cable are we bending it? Got me. Can't see it. 2.85. 2.31. I'm just beginning to see something here. You see this here? I'm at 2, you understand, 2, and I can barely see anything at all. There's nothing I can actually measure. 1.73 times the diameter. Now, I'm beginning finally to see a little something happening here, and I can measure it with a cursor on the face of this, and that low point is now 73.15 instead of 75 ohms, right? And I calculate 73.15 ohms to a return loss of 38 dB. Remember, 30 is good. 38 is fabulous. This cable is fabulous, and it's being bent at 1.73 times the diameter. 1.16. Now I can clearly see where I'm doing stuff, right? You can see it show up. And I'm at 33.6 dB return loss. This cable is still fabulous, but I can see it. 0.58. This is a bend less than half the diameter of the cable. And you can clearly see I am now finally having an effect on the cable. And this effect is 67.5 ohms, 25 dB. See, I'm no longer wonderful, but I'm still better than our guarantee, you know, which is 23 for low frequencies. I'm still better than that. So this cable, if this is the way it came out of the factory, would pass. Although you're looking at this now, wow, that's, you can really see that, can't you? Okay, so we take this out and we crush it by hand. Here's folded with pliers. Well, duh. This is called fail. This is what you expect to see, right? And the point is, if you unfolded this by hand, you would see all the crushing and this wouldn't be smooth. It's all lumpy and bumpy and weird. And the jacket has discolored, which is one of the giveaways that something's been folded. If you see discolored jackets, this is a danger sign. Maybe somebody is trying to hide something from you, you know, that something got bent and folded and squashed and you know, played with. Okay, now this is clearly failing. Although, you notice one interesting thing. The return loss here is 13.85. The SMPTE limit is 15. This cable is astoundingly close to okay. I don't think so, but SMPTE thinks so. Okay, which is amazing because you can see how horrible it is. This is it unbent. A lot of it comes back. A lot. Lots more than I expected. We're at 26.8. It's not wonderful, but a lot. So I'd say if you have accidentally bent the cable, unbend it, and you're probably okay. I mean, you tell me what this means. Okay, yeah, okay. It would work. It would work. It wouldn't work. Wouldn't work as well as a unused, perfectly new cable, but it would work. There's the stress whitening. This is on one of the paired cables, but there's the stress whitening. You can see what that looks like when it's unbent, to give you away. Okay? Okay, next cable, 1505. I'm going to go faster through these because you now know what you're going to see. Okay? 4, 3, 2, 1, 1, 1, because it's a smaller cable, you realize. So that smaller diameter is a greater percentage of a radius, so to speak. Okay? Normal, unbent. And you can certainly see the end of the cable here. Okay, 4.06, four times, nothing. Three times, nothing. 2.71, nothing. 2.03, nothing. 1.35, well, I think I see something happening in the square there, maybe. 1.1, now I definitely do. See, I can clearly see there's something happening there. And this is 72.7 ohms, 36 dB, still wonderful cable. Well, I could just see something here. Folded with pliers, 20 dB. Yeah, not very good. Don't fold it with pliers, okay? That's pretty much what this is telling you. Unfolded, 33 dB. Look at this. Unfolded, we're back to wonderful. We're back to beyond 30, which was excellent. Wow, even though I can see it, but a lot of it came back. Flexible cable, 6094F. Normal, unbent, 3.47, 285. Now, this is supposed to be better than the solid, right? This is flexible stranded stuff. 173, I guess I see something happening there. Yeah, there it is, 1.16. I'm at 40 dB. 40 dB, which is fabulous. I mean, for a stranded, I didn't know you could do 40 dB on a stranded cable, and this one isn't working so well. 0.58, less than half the diameter, 33.6, wonderful, you can see it. And then finally, crushed with pliers. Ah, this is where the stranded doesn't go so well. I'm sorry this is cut off here. 14.68 dB is what it says down at the bottom there, 51 ohms out of 75. You see, we're seriously outside the line there. And this is where stranded really starts to fall apart when you think about it, because the strands themselves are moving in different directions and changing their shape, and it's not a round wire, it's a bunch of little wires, and so it's kind of hard to tell where they're all going. So when it's really crushed, the stranded stuff is much worse than the solid, because the solid is always just one wire that you're bending. Of course, if you do it a lot of times, you could bend this one a lot more times before it breaks than the solid one. Although the solid one is probably good for about 2,000 flexes before it breaks, many times more than you would think. You know, you're thinking back to the telephone wire of 1950 that you do three or four times and breaks. That's because they didn't anneal the wire very well. They didn't process the wire well. This is a completely different kind of wire from that. But the whole point is, so stranded wires, when they're crushed, are worse than solid wires, if that makes any difference to you. Unbent. Hey, look at this. We're back to 31. That's excellent. That's wonderful. You can still see it. That's pretty good. 1505F, the smaller flexible one. 4, 3, 3, 9, 2, 7, 1, 2, 0, 3, 1, 3, 5. I can read something here. 30 dB, it's fine. 118, 25 dB. You can see something happening here. Not wonderful. When we're down about 1 times the diameter, it's a smaller cable. Squeezed with pliers, we were seriously down in the bad thing. Although, 1464, you know, Simpty's limit was 15 dB. This is why I don't like those Simpty limits. It would allow you to pass this, almost. 1505 unbent by hand, 26 dB, pretty good. Not wonderful, good, it would certainly work. And that's the thing. These are patch cables, right? So it's most likely that these are the ones that are going to get damaged. The other ones are in the rack. They're stuck. They're done. But the patch cables, oh, you're going to step on them and roll over them and, oh, God, you know, throw them out the window. And, you know, so they're more likely to have this kind of damage simply because they're handled all the time. So you might want to think about this. Not that I'm saying use solid wire for patch cords because that's a pain, but they would certainly perform better. Certainly when they're damaged, they would perform better. So, and the stranded stuff is twice as expensive as a solid. Now you begin to get, like, really confused. Okay? So maybe that's my job here, is to confuse you. 24 hours later, and I'm sorry the trace is so low because I wasn't there at the time, 33.66 dB. A whole lot of the performance, just leaving that cable on the counter in the lab for 24 hours, and it's now wonderful. It's past 30. Interesting. Things recover. Now, we've always known that inside a cable, center conductors are forever moving around. You know, they're trying to relieve pressure and stuff. And so we make this hard cell foam inside that resists the movement of the conductors. But they're always moving. We know this. And the point is, so when you unbend that cable and you put it on the counter, it continues to unbend itself. Right? To try and get to the center of that foam that's in there. And this proves it, that after 24 hours, I have an excellent cable. Okay, twisted pairs. Different analyzer, because now we have a differential input instead of, you know, an unbalanced input kind of thing. So different analyzer, different inputs. And so what you're going to see, I don't like the traces as much, but this is the difference between these two devices. Okay, twisted pairs, and you know this right off the bat. They're not as stable as coax. You know, a standard coax, the finest Radio Shack coax is plus or minus 5 ohms. You know, that's standard. The average cable in our catalog is plus or minus 3 ohms. Most of the cable that you're buying from us, like 1694, is generally plus or minus 1 ohm, and usually plus or minus half an ohm. I mean, really stable. Well, that's why coax got invented, because they could put the two conductors in there, and so no matter what you do with the cable, they don't move around. They can't. There's nowhere to move to, right? And so it's really, really stable in impedance. But you compare that to a twisted pair, just a regular twisted pair, and the point is when you bend that cable, guess what? Those two wires want to move around. They're trying to relieve these pressures, and they're going to move apart from each other or wham into each other or, you know, do something. They're going to move around. And therefore, the impedance tolerance of a twisted pair is never as good as a coax. In fact, the best twisted pair we've ever made, which is our bonded pairs, you know, where we stick the two wires together so they don't move apart, that's plus or minus 7 ohms. In our bonded pairs. And remember I said the lousiest coax you can buy is plus or minus 5, which simply means the twisted pairs are approaching coax performance. Will we ever get there? Well, if you could do a twisted pair that's plus or minus 3 ohms or 2 ohms or something, we would buy all our Twisted Pairs from you. I'm back to this. So go for it. And if you could do plus or minus one on a Twisted Pair, you'd be a billionaire. Or maybe a trillionaire. Because it's impossible. At least it is right now. And in fact, what are you going to see? Well, in the data world, we say plus or minus 15 ohms in the data world. In the AES EBU world of digital audio, they say 110 ohms is the center impedance, plus or minus 20%. That's anything from 88 to 132 ohms down here, 88 to 132 ohms. That's a huge variation in impedance. And that's simply telling you these are twisted pairs. That's what this is. They have to give you a barn door, or it won't work. They won't be able to get there. And what that means is, if I had 88 to 132 ohms, the best return loss I could get on a pair like that would be just about 20 dB with that wide range. Now, Belden's cables, this is the advertising portion here, are about twice as good as that. They're plus or minus 10%. They're twice as good as the standard, which means I can get up to like maybe 26 dB of return loss on a twisted pair, which is pretty good. And on that super bonded pair up there, the 701, you'll see that's 28.8 dB, 29 dB, approaching the 30 dB of a good coax on a twisted pair. We're approaching coax performance with a twisted pair. But believe me, I'm not going to show any bonded pairs now. I'm not going to show any data pairs. I'm only going to show two audio pairs, AES pairs, you know, the install version and the flexible version, and just look at those. And here they are, AES, one pair, this is kind of cut off here. And you can see 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, less than one diameter. And here we go, I can see different format here. Let me walk over here for the audio. This is the audio side of the room here. And the whole point is, again, you're looking at the analyzer. This is the analyzer here. Here's the connection point. Here's the connection itself, which we did really horribly, so you can see that this is obviously a connector, very badly done. And here's the cable, and you can see the cable is not a straight line. You see all this warbling here? It's because it's a twisted pair. And we come to the end of the twisted pair, and it goes to infinity, of course, because we didn't terminate the end of the pair either. So you can see the whole cable. Okay. So here we are, unbent. Here we are, 5.39. Well, that's interesting. Can't see anything. I can see stuff moving around, 4.5. But I can't really see anything dipping down. 3.59. I see dips, but I don't know what's what, right? Well, actually, back up here for a second. We read the bottom dip here as 94.59, supposed to be 110 ohms. That's 22 dB. Remember I said 20 dB is probably the number you're trying to reach here? So this is for AES pairs. This is good. The next one, 2.7, has improved. Now, don't ask me to explain this, but this is better. 96.35, 23.59 dB. The cable is better when it's just twisted tighter. I barely even say it. 23 again, 1.8. 0.898, less than one times the diameter. Now I can clearly see at 0.1 times the diameter where I'm at here. You can see that 96 dB, 23 dB. It's still wonderful, but I can see it. Here it is squeezed with pliers, and clearly you can see that we have now seriously compromised the pair, as we did with the coax, and we're at 17.45 dB, which is less than 20, so this is not wonderful. Although, this would certainly work as a twisted pair. And the point is, if you had one pair that was 20 dB and one pair that was 17 dB, what would be the difference? You wouldn't be able to go as far on the 17 as you do on the 20, or if you're looking at bit errors, there'd be a little more bit errors, the eye pattern would be a little more closed, you know. I mean, it's not like, there's no cliff here, you're not anywhere near the cliff. You know, the cliff for this is like 10 feet or 40 feet, you know, those numbers I was talking about. Yeah, we're at 3 feet, you know, so this has nothing to do with the cliff. And the point is, okay, when squeezed with pliers, you can see it. Here it is unsqueezed, and just like the coax, a lot of this comes back. This is now 21, almost 22 dB. This is a good cable. Interesting. Here's the flexible version. Will it outperform the non-flexible version, considering you paid twice as much to buy this cable because it is flexible? Well, if you want it to feel like a noodle, then you've paid money. If you really don't care, if you care about performance, let's see. Okay, here's normal. And you'll notice even normal here, we actually read the impedance here. It's not 110 ohms. Well, of course not. This is a twisted pair. It'd be 110 ohms occasionally, you know, on the right day with the wind in your direction, you know. But this is still 32.5 dB. This is still, you know, 20 is a good number. This is fabulous cable still. 104, 30 dB. This is, that you know, way good. 3.77 times, 30 dB. 3.01, just under 30 dB. 20 is the good number. 2.26, 29, went up. That's interesting. 1.51, 29. Look at this. With all this bending and twisting, this cable is still working very well. 0.754. You know, not quite half, but almost half. We're still way above 20. And we're less than 1 times the diameter. Crushed with pliers, and finally, oh no, finally, I've crushed it with pliers, and look at this. I'm still above 20. This cable would work fine, even though it's crushed, which tells you something about the fact that you got away with stuff and you didn't know how you got away with it because it worked. Now, there's one thing that's very obvious here that I haven't mentioned yet. These are all Belden cables. I didn't test anybody else's cables. Would they perform as well? I don't know. We've never done this before. I've never done this with my cable, much less anybody else's cable. Excuse me. So the whole point is, if there's some other cable out there, I would urge them to take their TDR, they all have a TDR, and to plug their cable in and do the same thing. And if I tested their cable, the problem is I couldn't show you because they'd all sue me, right? So, you know, get them to do it for you, to show this. Unbent. And you'll notice I can't see anything on the cable anymore, unbent. And I'm at 27, where 20 is the number we're trying to hit. This cable's just fine. Now, the reason I didn't do analog is really very simple. Because the wavelength at analog, at 20 kilohertz, is more than 2 miles. And since it's unlikely you're going to run your mic cable or your audio tie lines 2 miles, you don't need to know what the impedance of the cable is. Therefore, if I change the impedance, it doesn't make any difference. The whole secret is you have continuity, right? As long as those wires are connected, they will work. This is why they have all these experiments where they run stuff on barbed wire. Who's going to run stuff on barbed wire and look at it on a precision analyzer and see what barbed wire looks like? At audio frequencies, at analog audio frequencies, it probably looks just fine. Except it's not a twisted pair. It might be a little noisy, right? Because they're not twisted together. But other than that, no big deal. Because impedance doesn't make a difference. And therefore, bending audio cables when they're analog, as long as you make connections, doesn't make a difference. Okay, here's what we didn't test. Smaller and larger coaxes. I mean, I go down to a tenth of an inch in coaxes. I go up to, you know, RG8. In fact, in 50 ohms, I go up to like RF600 now, giant coax. Well, giant for us, you know, not Andrew giant, but not dielectric giant, but, you know, giant for us. I didn't test any plenum cables. I didn't really look at reflections. I could look at reflections in more details in digital audio and see, I mean, how much reflection, you know, I have reflection requirements in coax. I have no reflection requirements in digital audio. Should I? Is there such a thing? Can I have too much reflection in a digital audio signal? I'm sure some AES, I was just at the AES last week, I should have asked, there. You know, how much reflection is too much? Something nobody's ever asked. And of course, I didn't test any data cables like 5E and 6 and 6A, 10 gig cable, which we've been showing out here. And the point is, we make these with bonded pairs or unbonded pairs. How much difference do those make? I have a feeling that the bonded pairs, when you twist them around stuff, don't show any difference at all because they are the same distance apart. But I don't know that until I've tested them. So again, invite me back next year. So the conclusions. You got away with a lot of stuff, and you didn't know why, and now you know why. Because, in fact, cables are amazingly forgiving. And the point is also, if you do damage a cable, recognize that it's damaged. If you damage it more than once, that's much more severe because then you're talking about wavelengths and distances and things like that. That shows up as different effects on the cable than just a bend. On the other hand, I could show you in a presentation I have of a single cable with one deformation in the middle, but it's terminated at both ends. And what happens at high frequencies is this cable begins to ring. That distance begins to ring from the source to the flaw and back again. And the whole point is it rings because the cable's short and there isn't enough resistance in the cable to dampen the reflection coming back. You follow that? So there's bending and then there's ringing, you know, and it's like, oh, this is going to get complicated here. The whole point is a lot of the bending that you've done in the past, you got by with without realizing why, and things continue to work, you know. And it takes me 500 words to say this. So. Okay, and you have lasted through another controversial subject from Steve Lampen at Belden. Any questions? We need to get this now. Are you going to? Gary's going to be the microphone jockey here because we're supposed to get this on tape.
Questions?
Yeah. There's a question over there.
Back here to me.
Oh, he's running to you.
Running to me. There we go.
I'm not used to seeing engineers running.
In this business? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
About a decade ago, I saw some Belden test data on Category 5E stranded patch cords.
Yes.
By manufacturer.
Yes.
That showed some brands tended to degrade over time, over about a year or so, because the twists came undone. They were twisted together under tension, and they relaxed and degraded. So my question for you would be, if we kink something or put a loop in a wire and have it under the floor, can we leave it that way for a year, or do we have to fix it pretty soon?
Ask me next year.
What happens to that bend
well,
over
that's
time?
The thing. As I said, everything inside a cable is in motion all the time. So the question is, if you've done something that's bad and that it's in such a way that will get worse, if it continues in that direction, then the cable will get worse. If you've done something like unbent it, see, by unbending it, you're trying to take it back to a good position, it will continue to take itself back to good. So it depends on whether this is bad or good, what you've done to it. A loop is a bad thing. And if that makes things tighten and tighten and tighten, it's going to get worse and worse and worse over the space of a year. But that's the thing, that people don't think about it, but cable is a living thing. If you think of it like that, you'll understand that it's going to go in some direction, and if you can encourage it to go in the good direction, you'll get better. Or at least won't get any worse, let's put it that way. Any other questions? Yeah, another over there.
Okay, here's another one. I had experience.
Walk just, over to him yeah, while you're asking yours.
The other, about a week ago, about some Cat 6 cable.
Yes.
And the connectors were put on terrible. They were not put on to the specifications. And they still, I was surprised, they still checked out on an analyzer up to 650 megahertz. I couldn't believe it. And
are
there
saying,
were some damaging
you're
on the cable.
You're saying the wiring? Through. The wiring?
Well,
I
had
order?
About 2 inches to the jack. It was an electrician that put them on. They maintained the twist in about 2 inches, and they did certify, which was surprised me. There are also some tie wraps on the Cat 6 cable. I thought, boy, that's not going to certify, but they abused it quite a bit and it's still certified. So that was an education for me.
You're welcome. This is the thing. Stuff, you can manhandle stuff and it still works.
Looking at your chart for wavelengths.
Yes.
Were they all based on 75% velocity factor?
No, these were based on 100%. So, in fact, yes, you would actually look at the dielectric constant of the interior, which is 83 or 84%. That's actually the number that I would multiply by. So you're absolutely right. There is a little fudge factor I used there.
Okay, I was curious because I would have thought 100 megs would be 3.28 feet long. That's
100 megs is? No, it's three meters. You're talking about wavelength? You're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 300 million divided by the frequency, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Any other questions?
Yes.
Well, right here. Hang on. Last one. Okay, we're going to keep moving. I was just informed by Charles.
Chuck.
This is kind of related to the first question. These bends were temporary. Let's say you had a permanent installation in which there was a bend of, let's say, 3 times the diameter of the cable. Do you think for all intents and purposes the specs would be good?
What I would think is they would start good, but because you've left the bend in, the cable would try and equalize that by getting tighter and tighter and tighter, which means the cable would get worse and worse over time. Now, at some point, it gets to the point where the strength of the materials and the pressure, you know, equalizes, and they'll get to a certain point where they'll simply stop, that A will equal B. Now, where that's going to be, it's kind of hard to say. But you would get to a certain level, and then you would stop there. I'd say if you're 3 times the diameter based on the fact that you can barely see the results there, you probably would be okay.
Yeah, most, and that's what cases. I'm trying to interpret is because we're talking about temporary results.
Yeah, right? We did this and we took them apart, you right. know. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Steve. That was an excellent presentation.
Thank you very much.